Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 1, delivered on August 22nd, 2017. The title of this lecture is Introduction to Finance.
Tonight, Introduction to Finance. Finance is sometimes described, and in textbooks they say this, as a subdiscipline of accounting. It is not. Not at all. We use accounting information products, but we can't stop there because accounting information does not answer the questions that we have in our profession, in our craft. It gives us dark insights that we have to fix to answer the questions that we answer. Finance is actually a subdiscipline of economics. So you'll see things in here where I'll do supply and demand and all that kind of stuff. You'll see me motivating through the basic assumptions of economics, the motive of economic agents, utility theory, and where that utility theory fails in finance, and we have to have another theory that explains some of the things that we see. So this is a subdiscipline of economics, not of accounting. Let me dig in there for just a minute with accounting and why we can't just rely on accounting numbers. The first thing that would come to my mind when I'm talking about accounting as a start but not a finish would be this. You, madam, you were just so enamored with finance after the best teacher on earth taught you finance. That would be me.
Okay.
Mind you. And you decided you're going to major in finance, and you went out and you graduated. We sit there at the graduation ceremony, our black robes, the faculty. You are so unworthy of this degree. But we were, I was proud of you because you got a job at State Barn for $60,000 a year, and you went off, and there you are, having a good time. You disappeared, didn't hear from you for 2 years. You show up in my office 2 years later. Oh my, what the hell was your name? I recognized you. I just couldn't remember. And you were a finance major, and you're working at State Barn. Well, you've obviously risen in the ranks by now. I'm so proud of you. And you say, no, Professor C. I left that graduation ceremony, and I said, no, I cannot do this. You say to me, I opened my own donut shop. You what? Yes, and I just got my first full year's financial statements, and I made a profit of $20,000. Aren't you proud of me, Professor C? You know what I'm going to say to you? You dumbass. You did not make $20,000. You lost $40,000. Because the opportunity cost of making that $20,000 was $60,000. So you lost money in that business. That's not going to be in the accounting numbers. The accounting numbers are going to tell you $20,000. No, that's not what happened. And your economic behavior will inform you that you are in the wrong business. Eventually, Clueville will call you on the phone. Ring, ring. Hello, this is Clueville. Get out of that donut shop. And I'm going to say the same thing to you. I'm going to say, burn that donut shop to the ground. Well, wait, bring the donuts. Let's not get radical. You understand that? That I cannot rely on the accounting numbers because they don't include the opportunity cost. The companies, all the time, you see a company post a profit for the quarter and the stock price goes through the floor because the point was that the investor said you should have made more based upon the risk we took in investing in your stock. It happens all the time. because they're not including the opportunity cost that is involved. You should not be here. You know why? Because you could be out making money instead of being in this class, listening to my loud lectures and smelling my bad breath. You could be out there making a good... Oh, I almost hurt myself. Making a good money. You could make $10, okay, $8 an hour. But you're in here 5-6 hours a week. Then you're doing your homework another 10-12 hours a week. You're throwing away all that money. And I guarantee you that if someone called you on the phone and said, we would like to hire you at $100 an hour, but you're going to have to quit college, you know what you do? Yeah, you would quit college. You would call me on the phone and say, kiss my aspirations. You see, opportunity cost drives us. It's not money that comes out of your pocket. It's money that does not go into your pocket. That accounting can't do. Accounting can't do that. And that's why we have to watch ourselves when we use accounting numbers, and we will in this class. We have to. But that's only the start of our analysis. And I'm going to talk about other costs, too, that accounting doesn't recognize that are critical to our profession, that we have to look at if we are going to properly assess the health and well-being of a company, if we are going to properly assess the viability of projects, if we are going to meaningfully give answers to the consumers of our information products from finance. That's what we do in our business. And where we have the edge as humans over the coming age of the machines is that our judgment can see things that aren't really visible to even an AI system. I'll tell you, you want to do financial analysis? Okay, go to the financial numbers, the accounting numbers. Start there. And then start looking back into the notes to the financial statements and see the hints and whispers in those notes about what's really going on. Go to their forms that they file with the SEC and look at those for information that might not be number related. Then get your butt out of your seat and walk into the stores. Talk to the employees. Look at the shelves. Are they stocking out on things too often? Are the employees motivated? Look at the non-number things. Then you begin to get a better picture of whether this is a good investment or not. Now, about the profession. Where did I put the... I can't find my fool marker that I had. Did I stick it back in my pocket or something? Seriously? Okay, anyway, let me turn on the lights here again. Just for a minute. Just for a while. Okay. I'm not going to sell you on finance as a major, although I would appreciate you considering it. It's a field where there is still a lot of opportunity. And I'm going to break down the different subdisciplines and what we can do here if you're interested in the discipline itself. The first one that people think of when you talk about finance as a profession or finance as a major, you're probably going to think about investments. This is one area of finance. Back in the day, back in my early years, I actually was in that. I ran my own brokerage house, and I was involved with the people on Wall Street in one way or another frequently. And you could buying and selling securities. Now, the field has narrowed a lot over the years, and a lot of the jobs are being replaced now by these decision-making financial engineering machines that do all of that for you. So there aren't as many opportunities, and the opportunities that are there are, like they always were, pretty darn brutal. For example, are you familiar with the term boiler room? In finance, if you want to be a broker, you're going to start work for some big firm, and you're going to sit in a room with a bunch of other people trying to buy and sell stocks for clients to prove that you're worthy of rising above that miserable environment where you're at a sad table with a telephone and a tickle file and all of that. It's rough out there. Did any of you see the movie Pursuit of Happiness? Yeah, that gives you, except that was a really nice place they were working. Trust me, the normal boiler room is a warehouse kind of, it's not like that, but it's pretty grim, and it's a pressure cooker situation in those places. And a lot of that's still out there to some extent. It's a lot of it's sales, a lot of it is, you know, doing things that you really might not think are the best idea for your clients, but still you can justify appropriateness of investment and all that. Investments is something, I'll give you a couple of quick stories. I took my students maybe about 4 years ago up to one of the boutique brokerage houses up in suburban Chicago. When I say boutique, those are brokerage houses that cater to a very small group of extremely wealthy clients. And so they're like more geared to the super rich, and their portfolio might have only 200-300 clients, all with a net worth above $50 million. Well, we went in there, and they were very excited, and my students were, to see, they wanted to see everything, but they wanted to see the trading room, that trading pit, where the brokers are calling on the phones. And, well, we went to that after we'd seen some other stuff, and there was this round thing about the size of this front of the of this lecture hall here, and there was one guy, just a very big guy, just sitting there, and he was just kind of looking at monitors, and they were kind of disappointed. Well, what are you doing? How do you buy and sell stocks? He said, "Oh, I don't. I just have the computer tell me what to buy and sell. I just execute the orders, make sure everything's in line, talk to the clients, and soothe their feelings. That's what he does." That was 5 years ago. 4 years ago, my students wanted to go to the Chicago Board up in Chicago. They, you know, the massive auditorium with the trading pits and the people screaming. Back in my time, we had all of these different signals that we used, and we had to change our signals hour to hour so that our competitors wouldn't be able to translate what we were doing with our calls and our bids and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, we went up there. Dead silent. This giant auditorium with these bleacher seats around it. Hardly anyone there. There were a couple of guys sitting in the bleacher seats looking at their computers on Facebook, playing World of Warcraft, stuff like that. It was not, well, the computers do all this now. No one needs to be here to do this. And that was 4 years ago that was happening. The only pit that was still running hot was the options pit, because the options people are a bunch of crazy mofos. They will create chains of contracts, 17 contracts long. They still befuddle the computers. "What are you doing?" The computer will say, "Shut up, turn it off." And it's that. And so there is the options pit that I think is still running up there. But other than that, it's dead on those floors of the exchanges. Now, that doesn't mean that if you go to the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, you're not going to see madness. It's still there. It's a lot tamer now than it was back in my time. It was a madhouse, and there was a lot of hate and disrespect, craziness, a lot of, before the opening bell in the bathrooms, there was a lot of snorting and things like that. Head colds. Anyway, it's a tough world. Oh, I'm going to be a day trader, okay? Yeah, you're going to be one of those people who sits at a computer all day. "Well, I know this guy. He made a fortune. I saw this guy on TV." Yeah, you see, for every one of those people who makes money as a day trader, there will be thousands and thousands who don't. The opportunity cost of time will finally drive them out. You're going to have some guy show up on TV. "I made $10 million being a day trader, and I can sell you my secret formula for $99.99 if you order before midnight." Well, you see, he's going to talk to you, but the 10,000 like him who got creamed, are they going to, "I'm going to sell you my formula for taking a butt bath as a day trader"? You're not going to hear from them. They're going to quietly crawl off into a corner and figure out how to be homeless. You see, there's a bias towards success when the reality is that in day trading, there ain't a lot of people who are successful if you take into account, especially if you take into account the opportunity cost of the time that they spend worrying over stocks, believing in mythical trading strategies that really don't work, but everyone believes in them so that everyone does them. Anyway, investments. I don't want to discourage you. If you want to go that route, I can actually show you where to go to get into it. But one of the fields that is still very prospective right now is corporate finance. Corporate finance is working inside a company doing financial stuff. Look, off the CEO, you'll come the chief operating officer. Now, down here on this side, you're going to have the finance people. I should write this. I don't want to write finance here. I should write treasurer. Now, below the treasurer, there are going to be two branches. One branch is going to be accounting. Now, accounting will be broken down into the cats who do the financial statements. And then there will be the ones who do the tax stuff and the internal auditing. They'll be reporting probably to a comptroller or something like that. Now, on the other side will be the finance people. Now, the finance people will be broken in. Well, this is really, really simplified. I'm sure you know that. But what you'll have is one offshoot will be cash management. The cash management people, think about it this way, and this is an actual example. I have dinners with officers of a company from time to time. One of them was telling me this story. They had $2 million come in. They got paid $2 million on a contract. Well, the cash management guy who was relatively new, he was writing checks to the people that they owed money to. And of course, his boss, this guy, had to approve the checks, co-sign them. And he said, "Are you out of your mind? This one isn't due for 2 weeks. $500,000, you're not paying that now. See this one right here? That's due in like almost 3.5 weeks. No, you're not going to pay that now." Cash management is knowing how to make money off the money that you've got in before you have to disgorge it to bill you owe. You can put it into short-term investments of different kinds, real fast investments. They make you a few bucks on every $100 or something like that, or every $1,000. And so always, always in finance, we don't care about profit. We really don't. We care about cash flow. We care about cash flow. Famous story of this guy who famous for being hired by companies and getting them out of trouble. He was a turnaround artist. And he said to the board of directors, "Gentlemen, I can make sure that this company has a profit every year until we declare bankruptcy in 3 years. Or I can make it so that we have cash flow so that we can survive for the long haul." You see, and this is interestingly, a few years back we had a panel discussion with former ISU people now at different companies. One of the people at Caterpillar, a grad from here, said, "For years Caterpillar focused on profit, and that's why we got into the trouble we got into. We are turning it around now, and now we are starting to pay attention to cash flow." She looked right at me when she said that. Yeah, you worry about profit, you make the accountants happy, maybe you'll even make Wall Street happy. But at the end of the day, if you don't have more money going in than going out, then you die right there and then when you finally have one of your debtors take you to court and shut your company down. So cash management is hugely important because that's where cash flow is king. Then you also have, down here, you have project analysis. At the very start, Project analysis. Do I have a marketing major here? No one? Okay, madam, you have developed this unbelievable marketing campaign. It is awesome. You want this thing to happen. Your team worked for months to develop this, to perfect it, to get all the details down. You have to come to me, the analysis guy, and I will tell you whether it's a yes or a no. Now, I will be grumpy cat, and I'll probably tell you no. Don't bother me until you have something where the net present value of the future expected cash flows is zero. In other words, all the cash flows going out, I'll show you how to bring those back so that they have a present value. Then we compare that present value to the cost of the project. If that number is negative, the present value of the future cash inflows minus the cost of the project up front, it's a no, period. So you can say, well, we're going to get $1,000 for 10 years, and this project costs us only $7,500. Obviously. No, not obviously, because that $1,000 a year for 10 years does not mean that's $10,000 in now money. It's going to be probably less than that, $7,500. So I'm going to say no to you. Hurt your feelings. But that's okay. You're a marketing major. I did a little disrespect there. Okay, a lot. But wait until you hear what I have to say about accountants. Okay, yes or no, up or down. And then once projects have been accepted, you say, if I say yes, then we have to figure out how to finance it. Now, there are several different ways to finance, the most important of which is the old-fashioned way. We earn money. But sometimes projects are large and they would overwhelm our ability to finance them out of our cash flows now. So we have to go to the markets. We can go to the stock markets and sell ownership in the company. We can go to the bond markets and borrow money. We ask ourselves, what is the optimal capital structure and how do we apply that to financing this project? That's corporate. Now, the next one, financial institutions. When I say this, what I'm talking about are entities like banks, credit unions. In banks, there are commercial banks. There are banks that do focus on specific types of loans. There are banks that aim at specific types of depositors. There are investment banks that finance stock offerings by big credit-worthy corporations and bond offerings. There are all kinds of different banks. Truth be told, a lot of finance majors I know get internships at banks, and they end up staying in banks. They're a quieter environment. They are very well disciplined. The problem is that the big scandals oftentimes involve financial institutions. It's a culture in some banks. They just can't stop doing wrong. And I will focus on these scandals. I'll tell you about some of them. That does not mean that most people in banking aren't good people. I've met fine, upstanding people, really dedicated to helping consumers, helping businesses, obeying the law. However, it is those dark spots that really bother us, and we have got to find a way to punish the people who do that much more severely, because these people have so much power that they can hand responsibility off down the line and see their underlings take the fall for what is corruption at the top of these big banks, like Citibank, Wells Fargo, and yeah, I'm naming them, okay? And I'll delete that from this vidcast and this podcast, because we get money from those guys. Awkward? Damn, it's hot in here. Okay. Now, here, this is hot all over the place. Here at Illinois State, we have actually now have a center for financial planning. These are the people who craft a way forward for individuals and couples and households, usually. Sometimes for companies, too. for them to achieve their goals through their lives. Okay, you want to buy a new house in 5 years. Okay, you want to have a new car every 3 years. You got to finance for your kids' college education. This is the kind of stuff that financial planning focuses on. It's actually a pretty interesting field. A couple of things about it. One, you have to realize that you are going to be dealing at the lowest with middle-class people. More likely, you'll be dealing with upper middle class and rich people. You are not going to serve the poor. You're not going to serve the working poor. You're not going to serve the lower middle class. You are going to be serving people of means, of money, of income, of wealth, and all of that. That's your clientele. I took my students up to J.P. Morgan, or no, it wasn't. It was Morgan, with my club students, and we were treated to the 55th floor of the Chase building, and my students sat in this gorgeous room, and the financial planning people, wealth management is what they call it euphemistically, the wealth management people came in. And they sat down, and they talked to us about what they did. First thing they made sure the students understood, well, we are really not interested in anyone who has a net worth less than $15 million. And what's the average wealth of our client? And they mumbled something in the $100 million range, staggering amounts of money. They're not interested in people below that, really. And they explained that in their business, a lot of what they do, the portfolio management itself is machine run. It's a lot of the decisions are based upon putting in the parameters for the goals and the wealth of the people and their cash flow, and then letting the portfolio form off those. A lot of what they do is holding hands, talking to the clients when they've got problems. These are problem solvers. Okay, you've got a kid who has suddenly dropped out of college and he's a ne'er-do-well. How do we handle that? Okay, your uncle, so-and-so, he's just found out he's got cancer. We're going to have to do some planning for that, get some money shuttled in to make sure he gets the best care that money can buy. Those kinds of things they do. Financial planning has two sides to it. There is the back room, the decision-making on the portfolio structures. But then far more is the front room, the selling of the products. You can make a large amount of money, but you have to be able to sell and willing to sell and willing to push in the right way, crafting your pitch to an audience that doesn't really bend to the traditional methods of sales. That's what you'll do if you're on the front end where the big money is. And believe me, I've had former students come here and they tell how much they're making, what it took for them to achieve that, which was, I mean, their stories are just like, you did that? One guy, he talked about walking streets in the summer in the wealthy neighborhoods, just handing his card out, knocking on doors, ringing doorbells. But now he is wealthy. He's making a fortune. And he's got a great family and all that. So it's there if you're interested in financial planning. We've got a financial planning institute, concentration in it, all that. Another place is real estate. We don't do much in real estate here. Interestingly enough, one of my original specializations was real estate finance. It's a very interesting field. It's actually way cooler than a lot of them. I mean, if you get in, I'm not talking about residential real estate, selling houses and all that. I'm talking about the commercial real estate, doing deals, buying and selling strip malls or land for different projects and skyscrapers, I suppose. Sometimes, I don't know, I've never met anyone who sold a skyscraper, but real estate on that end, it's got a mathematical side to it. But it's kind of like bonehead arithmetic, and the machines do that much now. But it's actually a very interesting thing, deciding whether the price for, let's say, a little shopping mall is good enough. What if we buy this and just tear it down and build an open-air mall? Ask yourself, is this worth the price to do that? How much will we make off doing it? That's real estate finance. And then there are other sides to finance too. They're kind of like the world I was in. I can talk more now about my life as a consultant now that the statute of limitations is out, has expired on what some of the things that I can tell stories about. Although I have to say I don't think I would still go into some states because of certain things that happened. But there you go. I'll talk about different aspects of this. But this is where you can go if you have a major in finance. If you double major, accounting is a second major, economics is a great second major. Interestingly, I've had people who did marketing finance double majors, and they're doing pretty darn well, a first job. One young woman came to my office last year. She said she got her first job at like $55,000 a year with a double major marketing and finance. So there you are on that. Oh yeah, I almost forgot. One last one here, insurance. And risk management. We have the Katie School of Insurance and Risk Management, here at Illinois State. It's one of the top programs in the nation, and the director of the program and the name of the school would be recognized almost anywhere in the world in commercial insurance. If you're interested in getting into that as a second major or as your only major, let me know. I'll introduce you to the director of the institute upstairs. He will absorb you into his office and he'll start talking. When I'm saying insurance, I'm not talking about insuring mom and pop's automobile. I'm talking about commercial insurance. There are different parts of it, commercial brokering. Risk management is an aspect of that whole world. Managing the risk of companies through insurance products and other securities that can hedge risk and all of that. Huge field. Interestingly enough, in the world of insurance, there was a big hiring of insurance people in the 60s and 70s. And then the insurance industry stopped hiring people. They had their labor pool. Now all those people are retiring and they are really hurting in the insurance industry. I'm trying to remember what the number was, but they were naming something in the hundreds of thousands of people that they need in insurance because of the growth of the industry and the attrition of the employees who are now retiring. So that is definitely a growth area in the finance industry. And also, sometimes when you see the name insurance, what they're really doing is pure finance. My students were not too happy with the idea that I was going to take them down to St. Louis to Travelers Insurance. For one reason, there's this obsession. I want to go back to Chicago for my job because I want to live near mom and dad. Okay, fine. Let's go down to St. Louis, hear these people out. Well, that's insurance. We're finance majors. Only a few of us are insurance. No. Actually, the whole thing was that at this place, they were hiring finance people to price risk, to find out what they should charge the insured for taking on the risk of these big commercial projects. Really interesting stuff. I actually got a few converts from that. Now, we're going to pick this up on Thursday. Come bright and early. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.